What's going on, guys? Back on another episode of MLB The Showcast. First one of 2019. Excited for MLB 19, The Show. I am, of course, your host, Adam. Back again with my brother, Aaron. What's going on, Aaron?
Doing well. How are you?
Back again after a while. It has been a minute for sure. Obviously, we did not keep up with the podcast as much as we had hoped in the last season, but we're back and hopefully better than ever and looking forward to getting going this year.
That's right. Looking forward to dropping, I think we're doing, one episode per week is our plan at this point?
Yep, that's the plan. One episode per week should be more than enough to kind of break down everything that's going on within the game, especially if they follow a similar content release strategy as last year where, you know, most of the stuff came out on Fridays. Should be perfect for us. And obviously, if stuff comes up during the week, hopefully we can get another one out to you guys. But I think one per week should be good to go.
And of course, they're dropping the stream schedule soon, at least in the past years. We've started seeing pre-release streams starting in early February. Last year, the Diamond Dynasty stream was in early March. So we'll be here to cover all of those for you. Do a little breakdown of those streams, give our little bent and our opinion on what we saw and things going forward, and looking forward to a 2019 release.
Yeah, and of course, if you guys are new listeners, thank you for tuning in, first off, but also just to give you a quick kind of a rundown of how the show goes and what we're all about. Obviously, we're called MLB The Showcast, although we are not affiliated with, you know, the MLB The Show devs or whatever, but we talk about MLB The Show, primarily Diamond Dynasty, might delve into some other stuff here and there, but mostly DD, and try to give you guys some insight and kind of our opinions on what's going on in the game, and hopefully break down, you know, what we think should change and what we think is, you know, going good.
So that's enough about looking ahead. But before we look ahead, we gotta look back. So the first couple episodes we're gonna do, starting today, is a look back at MLB 18, The Show. And on tap today, we're gonna talk about the topic that was probably talked about most often, other than gameplay, of course, in this iteration of MLB The Show, and that is Immortals.
Yes, indeed. This was a hot topic, and I know for us on Twitter especially, we were very vocal about our thoughts on Immortals from pretty much the day the game came out until, you know, even now, so we'll still tweet about it. So Immortals is a huge topic, and we definitely need to get into it. So where do you want to start, Aaron?
I guess I'd probably start with just like an overview of like how we got them and what are our general thoughts were when they first dropped, and how those thoughts might have changed once we sort of saw how the program developed over time.
Right. So we knew about Immortals probably pretty much when the first Diamond Dynasty stream came out, like we said, in early March. So maybe a few weeks before the game came out, we knew that they were a thing. And I think everybody at that time was excited about it. They seem really cool. They're very different than almost any other card in the game in that they're not tied to a specific year. And they were actually based on the best year, you know, in every category for every player. So basically every stat was maxed to the possible.
I guess I'll stop you there. I think that was one of the biggest issues with Immortals. The fact that they are sort of a Frankenstein of a card of a player's career. So if a guy, take Vlad Guerrero for example, they're going to take his speed from his rookie year, but his power from his highest power season to make him just a Frankenstein of a card. And these were the only cards that they did this for. Everybody else, for the live series, you're looking at three-year averages of players' stats. And for other flashbacks, you're looking at one specific year. So do you think, how do you think they did looking at these like Frankenstein-type cards? Did you like that about the Immortals?
Well, I mean, at least initially, I thought it was pretty cool, obviously. I mean, when they first announced them, I mean, I was very excited. And even when the game launched, I was really hyped. Obviously, we were going crazy trying to get them done as fast as we could because I thought they were really cool. And I still do think they're really cool. But the problem I think we run into is that there really is no competition. Once you have one of those players, unless you just want to change it up and have a little fun or whatever, there's really no reason from a competitive perspective to use anyone else. You know, once you have Vlad Guerrero, outside of getting another outfielder and putting another outfield immortal player, there's really no one else you can replace him with because he's just so much better at everything. They're almost all five tool players. I think maybe the slowest one is like Mike Piazza with like 45 speed. I mean, that's not even that slow. You know what I mean? So literally like every single one of those immortals is head and shoulders above any live series or flashback player. It's really not even close until the finest players came out. So I think that was the biggest issue, is they were just so much better. And it really just created an issue where, especially at the top levels of gameplay, at top levels of ranked seasons, you'd pretty much only see Immortal lineups.
Right. So there's very little lineup diversity. And even at the lower levels now, I'm getting back into the show after a month or two off, and I'm seeing every single team that I'm playing in Championship Series and Division Series has Dennis Eckersley, has Mike Trout, has Ted Williams, like those Immortals that weren't tied to the initial drop. But every single team now has those Immortals that you could have gotten from programs.
Yeah, I guess with those guys, and we can touch on this more later, but with those guys, I don't mind it as much because, I mean, at this point in the game, like, it's pretty much over. There's no real content coming out very often. We're kind of gearing up for the new game, obviously. So at this point, I don't mind that there's relatively easily attainable Immortals for people. And even if everyone has them, I don't really mind it because if you're playing the game now, you're just playing it because you enjoy playing a baseball game, not because you want to, you know, be the best player and have, you know, World Series on the first day the season starts and things like that. So I don't really mind it too much now. I guess the issue is if we're going to have Immortals or something similar this year in MLB 19, the show, do we want them obtainable in July-ish when we got them this year? Or would we like them to be pushed to, let's say, November or December or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, so I guess I sort of don't want to move away from the lineup diversity question yet, because I think one of the reasons why you didn't see lineup diversity is because the Immortals were so much better than every other card, and there were so few Immortals of a given position. I think that could have been alleviated if they had done, say, four or five types of Immortals at every single position. So, say, if you didn't like Jackie Robinson at second base, you could look at somebody else, like, say, if Chase Utley got an Immortal or something like that.
Right.
Or Robinson Cano got an Immortal. But because you're limited to one or two options, say, for starting pitchers, which I think for starters, you couldn't even make a full rotation.
No.
Like, you're sort of left with only those guys, and that's why you kept seeing all those same lineups.
Right, yeah, I think that's a good point. Maybe if they had expanded them a little bit more or given you a couple options, or hell, I mean, another thing they could have done maybe, rather than giving you the chance to get all of them, maybe you had to choose which Immortal you wanted. So, like, your example, we'll take that and just run with it, and you can argue the merits of Chase Utley or Robinson Cano getting an Immortal, but just, you know, hear out the conversation for now. So, let's say those were the three second base Immortals, right? So, it's Jackie Robinson who we had, Chase Utley and Robinson Cano, and once you got, let's say, the second base Immortal mission done, you got to choose one of them, but that was, like, your guy.
That was the one.
Yeah. So, like, you couldn't have all three. You just got to pick one. Or maybe you got one and you could exchange it later with, like, some stubs or something. Obviously, I'm just spitballing here, but I think that might have alleviated some of the concerns a little bit, because then you're going to see more diversity. Somebody might prefer Utley or Cano to Robinson because they probably have a little more power,
right?
But somebody might prefer Robinson because he's got the speed, you know. So I think that would have definitely helped, but I'm not really sure if we still want that, just because they are just so much better. I mean, it really is just like, if you don't have basically an all immortal lineup once they were out, you were definitely at a disadvantage.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely true. I mean, obviously user skill plays some portion, but all things being equal, I'd rather have the Immortal lineup.
Right. And I know this year we had the introduction of the plus 100 stats, the 100 and up stats. And by and large, there weren't too many live series or flashbacks that had, you know, a lot of them. You might see a few. One that comes to mind right now is like the Chris Davis Team Epic card for the Orioles. I think he had like 120 power versus righties. And there were cards like that that were pretty niche that might have had like one or two 100 plus stats. But for the most part, everyone was, you know, 99 or less, whereas the Immortals were, I mean, at least half of their stats were over 100, if not more. So just looking at that alone, you know, take out the overall where they're in 99, they're really even better. Like, they are just head and shoulders above everyone else. And I think they might be well served to kind of tone it down if they wanted to do something similar. But I'm very interested to see how they kind of deal with that question of Immortals this year.
Yeah, yeah. It will be an interesting thought to see if they go back to it, which I'm guessing that they probably won't, at least not in this same way that they did it.
Yeah, I would guess that they won't. And I think something that they might adopt is a similar thing to Madden Ultimate Team, at least in the past. I didn't really play too much this season, but in the past with like things like Mutt Master, where you had this big goal at the end. Let's say this year it's Babe Ruth, or you know, the past year it was Babe Ruth because he was like the marquee guy for this season. I could see something where, you know, along the way, maybe you unlock these players, and they're not immortals necessarily, but you get like a 96 Jackie Robinson and like a 98 Albert Pujols. And yeah, they're really good, but they have flaws and they can be competed with other cards.
Right.
I could definitely see something like that where they're still very good and they're still, you know, probably top five cards of their position, but they might not be, you know, just guaranteed, no doubt, number one.
Right. And for a game that prides itself on not adopting the Madden model, where you hear it all the time from the developers in stream about how you can get the best cards on day one. Like a Mike Trout live series card is going to be Mike Trout's actual stats for this season, his actual ratings for this season. It's not going to be a dumbed down version in hopes that his better card gets released later in the year. So what I'd like to see is for guys like Trout, for guys like Mookie Betts, like the actual stars of Major League Baseball today, who are transcendent talents, for their cards, their live series cards, to be actually on the same playing field as sort of these end of game type cards. That 96 Jackie Robinson that you're talking about, the 98 Pujols, I'd like them to be on the same level, because these guys are Mike Trout, Mookie Betts on Hall of Fame trajectories. Like, there's no reason why their cards shouldn't stack up to Hall of Famers as well.
Right. I think I agree with all that. I guess another thing we should probably touch on is how you actually earned the Immortals and, you know, the process of how they release them. So just to give a little background, if you guys forgot, when the game first launched, every single Immortal was in the game, technically. Their program was in the game, and they each had one career arc that went into them that was in the game. And we knew you would need two career arcs per, right?
Right. We just didn't know when the second career arcs would drop.
Right. And I think one big issue while we're on the topic of career arcs is that some of them were completable at launch. I think of Billy Williams, Larry Doby, that I loved using early on. And then some just like inexplicably weren't. Like Chase Utley, I think Paul Molitor wasn't completable, maybe another one or two. And it was just really odd because they were there and you could get some of the program done, but then there were just little programs missing.
Right. Some of the player programs weren't all out there for you to get the three or four second base player programs you needed for Chase Utley to get his diamond card just weren't in the game yet.
Right, and it was really odd. I remember we looked earlier, and I think the discovery on a guy like Billy Williams was maybe the day after the game came out, like March 24th or something like that. And then the discovery on Chase Utley was like May 10th. Like, why is it 2 months after, you know? Like, it just seemed very weird that they did it like that. That they, you know, technically the Chase Utley program was in the game, but it wasn't completable until way later than some of the other career arcs. And it made for this kind of dichotomy where some of the career arcs, obviously, you could get very early, and they were very, very good players. And if you didn't have them, you were kind of at a disadvantage. And then some were completable later, but by the time they were completable, they were kind of irrelevant almost.
Right, you wouldn't have used them.
Yeah, I mean, the Utley card was really good, so that's maybe a bad example. But like Paul Molitor would have been very good when the game first came out. But by the time you could get him in early May, I mean, the card was pretty bad.
Right.
So it was just really weird how they did it, and I hope if they do a similar thing, like let's say they do the exact same thing with Immortals, right? I hope you can at least complete all of the first set of career arcs right away so that you can at least enjoy those cards, you know, for a little while.
Right. I think some of it was probably tied to the fact that they were releasing player programs, the bronze, the silver, and the golds, I think almost weekly. Like, there'd be some they'd drop, like, two or three a week, and then others they'd drop, like, six in a week.
Well, that was another weird thing, is they didn't release any new ones for, like, I want to say it was at least, like, 3 weeks after the game launched, which I thought was very weird. When the game first launched and we saw, you know, we developed a game plan because we wanted to get these done as fast as we could, and we saw, you know, the Utley isn't completable, the Molitor's not completable. Okay, what will we need for that? Okay, we need two or three more position player programs for those positions. Okay, when are those going to come out? We're thinking they'll probably come out next week, you know, the week after the game comes out, something like that. And it was just kind of radio silence from SDS, and just we're just sitting here waiting on these programs. Like, where are they at? It just It seemed weird.
It was confusing because at the same time, on launch, you had player programs that gave you a collectible that didn't go into a career arc that was available at that time. Like, I'm thinking of Javi Guerra, I believe, you could complete his player program. It gave you a collectible that went into the second career arc for relief pitcher.
Right.
Like, that you didn't even need until, like, July. So, like, why did some career arcs have all of the players that you needed? Some of them had a couple that you needed. And then why were there also player programs available that didn't have the career arc available at all at that point? It just didn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, it seemed like they planned it out and then kind of just forgot to tie up everything and just see how it worked, right?
Right.
Which I guess you can give them a little bit of a pass. I mean, it was the first time they did this kind of grand scale of, like, programs feeding into next programs and so on, which I really did enjoy. I like that kind of puzzle where you need to figure it out, right? You need to say, okay, I want to attack this way, and I want to do, you know, catcher, first base, and second base for these games, get all those done, and then move on to the next positions and, you know, see progress.
There's a huge strategy involved in it, and I'm a huge strategy guy, so I absolutely loved it. I also liked that it gave them the opportunity to reward lesser players with flashbacks, like Brock Holt. Like, Brock Holt was an all-star in 1 year. His all-star card, granted, is a 72 overall, but it's a cool card as a Red Sox fan I like to see.
Yeah.
Brock Holt get rewarded with a flashback. Just please don't make me try to hit two doubles in a game with Daniel Nava.
Oh my God. Some of those missions were insane, and thank God they changed it to where you could just get extra base hits from then on. I think those early position programs, you still had to do like the doubles or triples or whatever, but
I think I'm still seeing tweets about how people hate Joe Torre.
Oh yeah. I remember the George Brett from Conquest, and we're going to talk about Conquest in another one of these breakdown podcasts, but I remember that George Brett was like impossible. I think you had to hit two doubles or something like that with him, and people just could not do it.
So I guess hat tips to the developers to identifying an issue, listening to feedback, and correcting it going forward. So we'll give them credit on that one.
Yeah, they did do a good job with that this year, I think. But going back to Immortals, just in general, I really did enjoy the process of it. It was fun, I thought, going through every single program, like you said, unlocking some of these maybe lesser known or lesser heralded players, the bronzes, the silvers, the golds, those flashbacks. They were fun, like getting the Mark Reynolds, you know, gold breakout flashback, crazy power. It's fun. Like, just guys like that that you wouldn't normally use, especially if you're, you know, a hardcore online player. You're not going to use that Mark Reynolds card probably, but you'll use it to get some Immortals unlocked, which I think is fun. And it allowed for stuff like that. But do we actually think Immortals are a good idea in general? The thought process, like we said, of that Frankenstein monster of a card. Do we even think it has a place in the game?
So, if you're going to keep the same pool of cards, so limiting it to 20 or fewer Immortals, I don't think they have a place. Because the difference between an Immortal and a non-Immortal, even a non-Immortal that's a tremendous flashback, the difference is just so great that unless you just don't hit well with an Immortal or you don't pitch well with him, like, there's no reason to not have the Immortal on your squad. Obviously, I'm discounting factors like rating mod and things like that, but I just think that the difference between the highest tier card being the Immortal and the next tier card being a very good flashback is just so great that the disparity is just too much to overcome. So I'd like to see them make a couple changes if they want to go with the Immortal structure again.
Yeah, I guess it's interesting that you bring up if they had more. Like you said, they had around 20 this year. I think it might have been 18 or something like that. It doesn't really matter that much how many they had. It wasn't that many, right? It was more or less one per position, and obviously starters had a few, and I think there's three relievers. So there's really not much diversity, like we said, there. But I don't know if I'd want them to expand it, just because then we're getting into the issue of, does this player actually deserve
to be called an Immortal?
Right. Yeah. Where, and you could even make an argument with the guys they chose for later on. Like, is George Brett really an Immortal? I mean, yeah. Like, you could make that argument. I'm not going to sit here and, you know, yell at you if you want to say that, but like, I don't want to have those issues where, like we said earlier, Chase Utley, like, he's probably a fringe Hall of Famer. He might make it in, he might not. Do we really want him to be an immortal? You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's what I would fear if they expanded the pool. Let's say they made it, like we said, 3 or 4 per position. Unless they expand the legend pool a lot, they're going to have some reaches that are definitely kind of questionable, and it might be like a little odd to see.
Yeah, I mean, you'd be looking at like a Nolan Arenado immortal. You'd be looking at a Mookie Betts immortal.
Right.
You'd be pulling at your perennial all-stars from current players, and then you'd be also reaching on some legends that you have in your player pool.
Right, which I actually don't think would be terrible, but they just need to plan it out well. And it comes into an issue where the game is obviously most popular during the baseball season. It makes the most sense, right? When the game comes out in, you know, late March, everybody's into it. And through, you know, the summer, people are playing it because they're watching baseball, they're playing the game. And then throughout October probably is around, more or less around the time when people kind of stop playing or at least draw back their playtime a lot. And that is my, like, biggest issue with Immortals is I think of them as endgame cards, right? They're the best cards in the game.
Right.
And I think you should be able to only pretty much get them near the end of the game. But the problem with that is then if you get them at the end of the game,
are you really going to keep playing with them?
Yeah, when are you going to use them, basically? You kind of just play until you get them, and then it's like, okay, I got them. I beat the game, quote-unquote, you know? So I guess that's the issue I run into is I don't know if they are a good idea, because I think the only way to implement them correctly is to have them earnable, let's say October 1st. It doesn't have to be an exact date, but like, you know, pretty late in the year. But the problem with that is what's the incentive to get them if you're basically not going to play after that?
Right. So I guess, so these Immortals, they were in the game, yes, at launch, but you couldn't earn them until they released the second batch of career arcs, and that was, I think, late June. So, you think late June is too early?
I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's not.
What if they started with late June, but instead of having them all be unlockable, they released, like, 2 at a time that you could get
right.
per week?
Yeah, I don't hate that idea, and I remember we talked about this last year a little bit when we didn't really know when you were going to get them. I don't hate the idea on its face, but I would fear that, let's say they did the same thing, right, where it's only one per position, that is, and the first week that you're able to get Immortals, let's say, is, you know, the first week of July, and you can get Jackie Robinson and Goose Gossett or something. I think the problem that you're going to run into is literally everyone online that week will have Jackie Robinson right. and Goose Gossett on their team, and then the next week when, you know, Nolan Ryan and whoever else right. comes out,
everybody's
everyone's going to
have
those
them. Two plus the new two, yeah.
So that's, like, it would spread it out, which is nice, but I'm not really sure if it solves much. It just kind of prolongs it, I guess.
Right. Yeah, no, I think I agree with you on that. So I don't know what the right answer is here. I think personally, they either need to get rid of the idea that an immortal is built off of a person's best stats from any year of its career. I'd be okay if they took best stats from their, like, 7-year peak. Like, right. something like that. That's going to narrow the divide between an immortal card and a flashback that's based on 1 year.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it's still going to elevate the immortal to being an endgame type card.
Yeah, I don't mind that. And honestly, even besides that, I wouldn't mind if they had, like, we'll just keep calling them immortals for the purpose of this conversation, but I wouldn't mind if they just had programs for those players, and at the end you got, you know, the best year of their career. So I'd have to look into it, but, like, let's say Babe Ruth, 1927 or something like that, is his best season, right?
Right.
And they just pick out that card, and it happens to be a 98, and those are his stats from that year. Just a normal flashback, and it's still a monster, mm-hmm. but it's not this, like, Frankenstein, like we keep saying, where he has, like, 60-some-odd speed and, like, crazy stuff like that. Where he's just super, super juiced and everything.
How would you separate that from just a regular legend, though? Because a guy like, say, a guy like Frank Thomas, like he's a great player, but I don't know if anybody would put him on immortal status. But he had a year that garnered him a 97 overall flashback this year.
Right. I'm not really sure if you need to even separate it. You could honestly just have, rather than calling the tab in programs Immortals, you could just call it Legends or something like that, right? Where, and it just, it, that is only reserved for the cream of the crop, the Hall of Famers, the crazy, really, really, really good flashbacks, where you have a similar program set up in which you can get, you know, lesser versions of those cards. Like, that's one of the things I loved about the Immortals is you could get in, like, I want to say it was an 85 Babe Ruth or an 81 or something like that. The gold hitter, I remember, right, was really fun to use because, like, almost anybody could get that. You didn't need to put in a bunch of money or necessarily a bunch of time to get it, but you could still enjoy this Babe Ruth card, and it allows players who maybe can't play as much or can't spend as much to get those guys.
Right. I think we both agreed that the 87 Albert Pujols is one of our favorite cards.
Oh, that card's a monster. Like, so stuff like that I really enjoyed, and I do think that would be nice. And then literally, like, in this scenario, the only switch would be instead of it being a Frankenstein Immortal card, 99, you know, crazy 100-plus stats on every single statistic, it's just their best season, just like they normally would do for a normal flashback. So it's still a monster, but it's not this weird, you know, super juiced, incredibly overpowered card.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think we're both in agreement that the Immortal structure as is shouldn't be duplicated. And one thing we haven't even talked about, which is probably the most talked about thing about Immortals this year, is collecting the damn souvenirs.
Oh my God.
Can we get into that for a couple of minutes? I just want to rant about how many freaking hats and jerseys I bought and sold on the marketplace just to do Immortals.
Yep.
Like, when I play a game, I know there's going to be a little bit of binder management and manning the menus in a game. I play a game to actually play the game, to do the missions, to play the 9-inning games, to play online. I don't want to spend hour upon hour upon hour managing the market and putting up 20 buy orders for hats, getting those to go through and putting up another 20 buy orders for hats because I need 155 hats for one Immortal.
Right.
Like, I hated that aspect so much. Not to mention the fact that it's a barrier to entry because there's a cost associated with it.
Right.
For a program that is billed as being a free program, a play-to-get program. Not to mention that fact. But just the time suck that it took to actually get all of those damn hats.
Yeah. Oh, it was a massive time sink. Just a complete waste of time. And it added no value, right? It, like, the hats and the jerseys and stuff, I don't think anyone thought those were fun, especially because you can't use them. Like, you can't use them as your team's uniform or something like that, where at least it has some purpose, right?
Right.
Other, like, they literally are just there.
At least the bobbleheads, like, bobbled around a little bit. Those were kind of fun to look at.
Yeah. But, like, for the most part, the souvenirs were just pointless. And I really wouldn't mind, and I think we're going to talk about that in another one of these podcasts, just the market in general, and we're probably going to touch on souvenirs again. But I just don't think that they have any place in the game. They're literally just there to take stubs out of the market.
I think their place is, if you listen to the developer stream last year talking about these sorts of souvenirs, they were meant as a fun aspect of the game. I'm okay with them being a fun aspect of the game. You know what else is a fun aspect of the game? Your name icon, your nameplate, and the little icon next to your name. Those are just a fun aspect of the game. They don't have any bearing on any programs or anything like that. If you want to do souvenirs like that, fine. If you want to put, like, a small collection towards it, like they have right at launch, if you collect all the jerseys, you get X player or whatever. I'm fine with that.
Right.
Don't make them a central key to your biggest program of the year to the point where I need to spend hour upon hour upon hour buying and selling them.
Yeah, not to mention everyone else that wants to do Immortals had to do it too, which increases the price. And I remember buying jerseys for over 1,000 stubs each. Oh, and you got to buy 50 some odd jerseys.
Right, because there were some Immortals, like Jackie Robinson, only played for one team, so you had to buy Dodgers.
Yeah, whereas, like, that was another big problem with it too, is when they limited it to the teams. And it makes sense, you know, from a a program perspective, like, yeah, you're not going to collect Padres jerseys for Jackie Robinson, but like...
Right, but then you go for like a guy like Goose Gossage, you played on 15 MLB teams.
Right.
You could choose basically any other hat.
Yeah, it made it way easier for those guys. But yeah, let's say somebody only wanted Jackie Robinson, right? They had enough stubs to just do Jackie, but because he only played for the Dodgers and he can only get Dodgers hats and Dodgers unis, and they're way more expensive than any other team, that guy is screwed. Like, he either has to spend a bunch of money or be really, really good at like BR or something, or manipulating the market, which is not the easiest, especially if you have school, work, whatever.
Right. And the thing I keep coming back to, and I kept coming back to this when this initially dropped, is this was billed as a you play the game and you get rewarded program. And to me, the whole souvenir aspect, because it's a free market, the market's going to dictate what each of these things is going to cost. People noticed that Dodger hats and Dodger jerseys were in high demand, so the prices went way up. Like, that's going to happen in a free market. So for a program that was billed as you play the game and you will get rewarded, and there's already an incredible time effort that needs to go into getting these immortals, I hated the souvenir aspect of them. I don't think I can state it any more than I just hated that aspect of it.
Yeah, and I hear you on the fact that it really did cost a lot. I mean, we probably spent a good amount just to get, you know, stupid hats and jerseys. But I don't mind there being some barrier to entry. I just don't really know what the exact barrier should be.
I mean, to me, time is a huge barrier too.
Yeah, that's definitely true. You did have to put a ton of time in, regardless of the fact that you needed hats and jerseys.
I mean, even if you were quitting out just trying to get hits with second basemen, like, that would still take you a long, long time.
Yeah, there's no doubt. So you could be right in where, let's say they had just removed the whole souvenir aspect of Immortals this year, it still would have taken you a really long time to do all of them.
Look at when the second wave of career arcs actually dropped. Like, that, we played a ton, right? We had all of the souvenirs for all of the Immortals already done.
Yep.
We only played to get the new career arc so we could finish the Immortals. I still haven't finished three of the Immortals, personally. I think you finished all of them.
I finished all of them, yep. But it did take me...
But it took like a month, right?
It took me, I think, 3 weeks. Right. And I played almost nonstop because at the time I didn't have a job. So, right. Like...
Against computer, like... That's an incredible time suck.
Yeah, so, and I don't mind that. I think that's fine because, at least with the way they were in this game, they were, like we said, the best cards in the game, no doubt, bona fide best cards. So I don't mind that it took you a while. I don't think everyone should be just be given those cards for logging on, right?
Right, I agree.
So I don't mind that, but it's where it's the time suck and the stub investment that you need to make. And when we say stub investment, I mean, we're basically talking real money, right? Unless you're a stud BR player or a guy that gets World Series every season, you're probably not going to have a ton of stubs to spend on stupid things like hats and jerseys. You're going to want to use those stubs on players you want.
Right.
And things like that. So, yeah, I think if they had removed the whole souvenir aspect, I feel like a lot of people would have liked Immortals a lot more. There'd still be the issues we talked about where they're the best player at their position, no reason to use anyone else. But at least there wouldn't be that kind of, you know, aching feeling where it just feels like the devs are trying to make you spend more money to get these players.
Right. Agreed.
So I guess that kind of wraps up our Immortal talk. I mean, do you want to mention anything else? I think we're pretty set on that.
I think that covers most of the bases. I'm sure I'm missing something that I had raged about earlier in the year with regards to Immortals. But, I mean, I enjoyed having them on my team.
Oh, they're definitely cool. I think I would love to see some kind of iteration of them back. Like I said, it could just be where they make it the best season of that person's career, or like you said, the 7-year peak or something like that. I would like to see something akin to that because I do like having to work towards something. It just gives me motivation to play the game and enjoy the game, things like that. But I think there's a lot of room for improvement, and I hopefully they take all that to heart.
Yeah, and I hope they just don't ditch it completely. I think they've got a good starting foundation. They just need to make some modifications to it.
Right, and like we said, I think one of the best things that they did with that is the program structure of it going from, you know, the bronzes and silvers up to the career arcs, up to the immortals. I really like the stepping stones. So hopefully they continue that, whether that's with the immortals, quote unquote, or with different program structures. But I do really enjoy that because it makes it kind of a challenge, but a fun challenge.
Right. Agreed. And I think the biggest thing to me about immortals generally, and you'll hear this, you'll hear us talk about this in the future episodes. They took a chance with this immortal program. There were certain things that worked, certain things that didn't work. But the biggest thing to me is that they took the chance to actually do it. Like, that speaks volumes. Instead of regurgitating the same programs year after year after year, I want to see something different. I want to see something challenging. I want to see something that can get me engaged in the game and keep me coming back to the game. And I think the Immortals did that. And it showed it showed them taking a risk and trying something new.
Yeah, I do like that a lot. That's definitely true. It was way different than anything they'd ever done. So you got to give your hats off to SDS for that. Obviously, there are things that they need to clean up and maybe address in the upcoming year, but overall, it was a good step forward. All right, so to close out these episodes, at least for the time being, early on, right, we're going to do legends who we hope that they introduce to the game, and we're going to go by division for each episode. So for today, we're going to do the NL West, starting with the Arizona Diamondbacks. Aaron, who's your choice for any legend from the Diamondbacks? And I guess for just a quick frame of reference, we want to do players that are pretty much known for playing on that team, not a guy who played like one season on that team or something like that. Probably a guy that played most of their career there, at least a good chunk. It's somebody you would really want to be in the game. So who's yours from the Diamondbacks?
So I think for the Diamondbacks, there's only a couple actual choices. The team has not been around very long, and we have already got Luis Gonzalez in the game. I think the go-to answer has to be Randy Johnson, the big unit.
Yeah, no
the
doubt.
6'10 lefty, Hall of Famer. The guy pitched a perfect game. Does he have a 20 strikeout game in his career? If not, he was damn close a couple times.
I don't know, but he killed a bird one time.
He did kill a bird. I don't think they're going to put that animation in the game. This is still a family game.
I mean, hey, you can get a teen rating on the game if they need to. I don't mind.
But this guy is an absolute monster. You go to his baseball reference page and it's just lit up with bold and italic stats. And for those of you who have gone to baseball reference, you know that bold italic stat means that dude that year led the majors in that stat. He just got a ton of them.
Yeah, you see those bold and italics, you know that guy was a beast. That's just...
I mean, the big unit is going to have incredible stamina in MLB The Show. He's going to throw upwards of 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
He's going to have a wipeout slider.
Yeah, oh, my God.
And he's going to be a menace. He's 6'10" with a freaking mullet.
He'd basically be Billy Wagner, but a starter.
Right. I mean, how could you not want Randy, the big unit, Johnson in the game?
Yeah, that's a great choice. And like you said, a pretty obvious one, I think. But it had to be said. So mine for the Diamondbacks, maybe a little bit more of an obscure choice, but I'm going to pick Byung-Hyun Kim.
Yes, so BK Kim.
Byung-Hyun Kim, I remember him pitching early on in the Diamondbacks' kind of success, and I remember especially in 03 when they won it all.
01
when he won it all, so I'm sorry. And the sidearm delivery, I mean, how can you not love that? Guy's got a crazy delivery. Now, in 02, that was easily his best season. Had a 2.04 ERA, 36 saves, and 84 innings pitched. The guy was, you know, not a great pitcher necessarily. He has a lifetime ERA of 4.42. Not that good, especially for a reliever. But he'd be fun, especially with that sidearm windup. I mean, it's just funky. It would be fun, and obviously nowhere near Randy Johnson. And I hope if you know, we had to pick one or the other, I'm going to go with Randy Johnson. But if they could get both, I'd be pretty happy.
I mean, I would love Byung-Hyun Kim. I mean, you're looking at a sidearm reliever, like a Darren O'Day type, submariner. He's going to be tough to hit. He's probably going to give up a lot of hits, but he's going to be a little funky to face on the mound.
Yeah, no doubt. So next up is the Colorado Rockies, and I'll jump into it with mine. I got Todd Helton on this one. Another
of course.
Fairly obvious choice. I mean, the guy was a monster in his time in Colorado. Made 5 straight All-Star teams and actually was only a 5-time All-Star, which I was a little surprised by. But his stats in some of these years are crazy. The one that jumps out, obviously, is 2000. He led the league in batting average, on-base, slugging, and OPS, obviously.
Is that good?
That's pretty good, I would say. He also led the league in RBIs with 147, had 42 dingers and 59 doubles. Somehow only finished fifth in MVP. I'd love to see who finished 1-4.
And that's the pre-war MVP voting, too.
So. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I guess they were still knocking Coors back then. But regardless of Coors or not, Todd Helton was an absolute monster throughout his career. He could have a ton of great cards. And hell, he could push for a possible Immortal card if they would, you know, consider doing multiple per position. And he would be a really, really fun addition to the game.
I wonder how his card might play in this year's MLB The Show. Considering power is such a huge need. Like, he's got good power, but it's mostly, like, doubles power.
Yeah, 369 career home runs, but he also played 17 seasons. Average of 27 a year. It's pretty good, but it's not, you know, the crazy, crazy power.
Yeah, so you're probably looking at like 75, 80 power.
Right. But, I mean, he would be a fun card. He would hit for an amazing average. I'm sure his contact stats would be above 100 on each side. He would be a beast.
Yeah, he definitely would. Now, for my guy, I'm not going to reveal it right away. I'm just going to read off some stats from his 1997 season. How do you like a 366 batting average? A 452 on base? A 720 slugging that leads to a 1.172 OPS. The guy hit 49 home runs, drove in 130 RBI. He was an all-star, was the Silver Slugger. Oh, he won a gold glove and was the MVP. I'm talking about a guy who isn't in the Hall of Fame yet, but damn well should be, and he should get in soon. My man, Larry Walker.
Yeah, it's another great choice. I mean, those two, right? Todd Helton and Larry Walker, they're almost like no doubters.
I mean, we were looking at the Rockies players in their history. I think those are the only two that we could possibly go to. I mean, you can make a case for like Mike Hampton or Brian Fuentes, but like, do we really need Mike Hampton or Brian Fuentes?
I mean, Mike Hampton would be fun with that power, but yeah, I see what you're saying. Larry Walker, a little bit better than Mike Hampton.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really going to look at a legend pitcher just to get him in the game so I can hit with him.
I mean, I guess you play the game differently than I do then.
But I think Todd Helton and Larry Walker would be great choices to add in the game for MLB 19.
Yeah, no doubt. So next up, Los Angeles Dodgers. Who's your choice there?
So I'm going to go a little bit of a throwback. And we've got cards from the 30s. We got cards from the 40s. I'm looking at a guy who pitched in the 50s and the 60s. And that's the southpaw, Sandy Koufax. I'm a Red Sox fan. I grew up watching Pedro Martinez. And the guy that Pedro was always compared to, his 10-year peak was always Sandy Koufax. So I got to learn a lot about Sandy Koufax and just how much of a monster he was. He only played 12 years in the big leagues, but those were damn near the 12 best seasons a pitcher has ever thrown up. His last 5 years, he led the NL in ERA.
Yeah, that's insane.
He led the NL in ERA his last 5 years. Oh, he led the NL in FIP his last 6 years. So everybody who says that ERA is a bogus stat, he led the league in FIP as well for an additional year. Like, the guy has a 2.76 career ERA. 2.76?
That's absolutely ridiculous. Crazy. Yeah, 2.76 in one season is considered good.
His last 2 years, he threw 335 innings and then 323 innings, and then he retired.
Yeah, it's crazy.
The guy's a monster.
Yeah, you really wonder. Like, I know a lot of people would still consider him in the upper echelon, maybe top five pitcher of all time. But if he had pitched five more seasons, there'd almost be no debate, right?
He's a starter. He's got a 1.1 whip for his career. He won his last four seasons. He won 3 Cy Young Awards and finished third in the other year.
That's nuts.
It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt. Like, if they're going to pick anybody from the Dodgers that isn't already in the game, it's got to be Koufax.
He led the league in strikeouts per nine innings 6 times.
So for mine, can't compete as much with Koufax, but was still a great pitcher in his own right, is Fernando Valenzuela.
Fernando Mania!
Yes, Fernando Mania. Fantastic pitcher, especially early in his career. Made 6 straight All-Star games early on. And in 1981, he won Rookie of the Year and also won a Cy Young in that same season. Pretty incredible. You don't see that too often. He actually also finished 5th in MVP, and he won a Silver Slugger. Like, I mean,
He's a five-tool pitcher.
Yeah, I mean, this guy was a monster. Had a great career with the Dodgers. Pitched 11 seasons there. Had a 3.31 ERA. Very good. And obviously with the Fernando Mania kind of stuff, you know, it would just add a fun little element to the game where people would enjoy pitching with him purely because he's just kind of a fun dude.
And for those of you who don't know who Fernando Valenzuela is, pause this podcast, or maybe if after the end of this podcast, or we only got a couple more minutes, go on YouTube, watch some highlights, and then go watch the 30 for 30 on Fernando. It's absolutely crazy how the impact that he had on not only the city of Los Angeles, but also on the Hispanic community when he came to baseball.
Yeah, no doubt. That 30 for 30 is fantastic. Highly recommend it. And one quick final closing thought on Valenzuela. In 1990, he hit .304 with a .730 OPS. And yes, I did not stutter there. He had a .730 OPS as a pitcher. This guy was Shohei Ohtani before Shohei Ohtani. So, Fernando Valenzuela, he'd have some decent hitting stats. He was a career 200 hitter. Obviously nothing crazy, but it would be fun. He'd probably have like 20, you know, 20 contact, maybe 10 power. He could swing it a little bit. All right, so next up, I think we got the Padres, right? So who you got for the Padres?
So I've got a guy that is a product of the steroid era. He's a typical steroid type guy that you think of. I'm going to go with third baseman Ken Caminiti. Unfortunately, passed away far too young. He passed away in 2004. She's actually been gone for like 15 years, which is just crazy to me to think about. Yeah. But this guy was just a beast at the plate. Obviously, a product of the steroid era. But I mean, he's a guy with a this is kind of surprising to me. He's got a sub 800 OPS for his career.
Wow.
But he won an MVP. So if you're looking at his best season, he hit .326, had a 1.028 OPS. He's going to be a monster, and it gives you another option at the hot corner, third base.
I actually like guys like that, too, who had a few really, really good seasons, but maybe weren't like an amazing career necessarily.
Right. So you're not looking at a Hall of Famer, but you're looking at a guy that's recognizable to you if you grew up in that era.
Right, and he'd have like ideally, he would have a really, really good car, let's say in 94, 95, whatever it works out to be. But he'd also have more attainable cards, maybe in the low 80s, the high 70s. So guys that really like the Padres or grew up watching Caminiti can get him without having to spend a ton of stubs or something like that. I really do like those options.
Yeah, for sure. So who's your Padre?
So my Padre is actually a former Red Sox as well, and that's where I, you know, remember watching him, obviously, but that would be Jake Peavy.
Oh, Red Sox legend, Jake Peavy.
Absolutely love Jake Peavy. He was a beast in San Diego. Just retired, I think, just recently, maybe last year. I know he last pitched in the MLB in 2016. But he had a great career in San Diego, pitched there 8 seasons, had a .329 ERA, won a Cy Young as well, also finished 7th in MVP that season. That would be 07. And he was just, you know, a great all-around pitcher, always gave you a ton of innings. Looks like he averaged around, you know, 170, maybe 200 innings a season for the Padres. Really a workhorse for you, and just was a very reliable pitcher. I mean, I don't know if he'd be considered like a top 10 pitcher of his era or anything like that. And he's probably not really, you know, a Hall of Fame candidate, but he was a great pitcher and would be a fun addition to the game.
Right,
I think.
Yeah, I mean, his early career was really, really good. But the thing I like most about Jake Peavy is in 2013, he got traded to the Red Sox midseason, won a World Series. 2014, gets traded to the Giants midseason, wins a World Series. In 2013, the Red Sox do the parades on duck boats. He went out and bought a duck boat after the parade.
It's fantastic.
And then in 2014, he went out and bought a San Francisco trolley after their parade. Like, that's just, it's so funny for a guy that's like a fringe player on both of those teams, but just is a great clubhouse guy. I think that's just a great facet to his story.
Yeah, why not? I mean, he made $127 million in his career. Like,
why
not splurge a little bit on a duck boat and a trolley car? Why not?
That's right.
All right, last team up is definitely the best for last today, at least, and that would be the San Francisco Giants. So I know who my choice is and probably the choice of everyone else in the community who's ever had an opinion on any of this, but who you got?
So I think I'll preface this by saying that the San Francisco Giants, maybe except for other than the New York Yankees, probably have like the best crop of players in terms of legends that are not in MLB The Show. Like, for the Yankees, you've got DiMaggio, you've got Mantle.
Gehrig.
You have plenty to choose from. Derek Jeter, Moe.
Yeah. The list goes on and on.
The San Francisco Giants have a couple, and my guy is another throwback to the 50s and the 60s. It's Willie Mays.
Yep.
The guy's top 5 career in home runs.
And he's probably a top 5 player overall.
Oh, yeah. I mean like, talk about a five-tool guy. This guy was a five-tool guy. He hit for power, hit for average. He could run. He could throw. And you know he could field. Like, everybody who is a baseball fan has seen his catch
in the World Series.
In the World Series, over his shoulder at the Polo Grounds. And then he whirls around and throws the ball in to hold the guy from trying to tag up. A guy was on second base and was trying to score from second base on that catch. So not only did he catch the ball there, but he held the guy from tagging up from second base. Like, it's a great play. Go watch the highlight if you haven't seen it in a couple years. But that's a guy I would want in the game. A really, really good right-handed power bat.
Yeah, I mean, Willie Mays is a no-doubt choice. Like, if they got him, he would be on par with, like, a Babe Ruth, right?
All
right,
I mean, so my guy was Willie Mays. But you said that you've got a guy that the entire community wants, but it's not Willie Mays?
Yes, I do.
Who is that?
Jeff Kent.
Yes.
So Jeff Kent.
The community is pining
There are people in the streets begging for Jeff Kent. No, I kid, of course. But, I mean, honestly, Jeff Kent would be fun. If they want to do it, let's do it. But we're obviously talking about Barry Bonds. I mean, this guy, I said Willie Mays is a top five player of all time. Unless you have some huge vendetta against steroids, you'd be crazy to think Barry Bonds isn't the best baseball player of all time. I mean, this guy was unbelievable. We mentioned it earlier about the Baseball Reference and seeing it light up with the bolds and italics. And with this guy, you get a little bit of gold as well, which means he leads the MLB all time in a stat. And obviously everybody knows Barry Bonds, the all-time home run king at 762. He also leads in walks at 2,558. 2,500 walks. He also leads in intentional walks with almost 700. People were terrified of him. I mean, Buck Showalter walked this dude with the bases loaded. And it worked because he knew Bonds would get him. I mean, I really wish I was a little bit older when Bonds was in his heyday and, like, you know, the late 90s, early 2000s, so I could have appreciated it more. And I know this is all with the caveat of he definitely used steroids and et cetera, but even before the steroids, he was an absolute beast in Pittsburgh. And, I mean, he won two MVPs in Pittsburgh. Like, people definitely forget that. And he was just an absolute beast regardless. So if we don't get Barry Bonds soon, whether it's this season, next season, people are going to be clamoring for it even more. I mean, what else can you even say about Bonds?
Yeah. Are you old enough to remember the MLB game? I think it was MLB 2K series that they didn't have Barry Bonds' rights. So they had a guy, John Dowd.
Yeah, John Dowd. Love it. And then Reggie Stocker.
Oh, Reggie Stocker was MLB.
For the show. And I remember we had him a couple years ago, right? Yeah. What was it, MLB 15 or 16? Something like that. And they had him in the game. But I would love if they somehow worked out a deal with Barry and got him in the game. I mean, he would be so fun to use. I'm just looking at these seasons where he won four straight MVPs from 01 to 04. Obviously, that was the height of the steroid era. That's when he broke the all-time, or the single-season home run record, I should say, in 01. But the OPSs are just absurd. So this season, I think Mookie Betts had, what, maybe a little bit over 1,000 OPS, maybe a 1050 OPS, was, I think, by and large considered the best player in the league this season. Obviously, you can make an argument for Trout or Yelich or whatever, but basically, my point is Mookie had an amazing season, had about an 1,100 OPS.
Yeah, he finished at 1.078.
Okay, OPS. So call it 1,100, right? 1,100 OPS, an amazing season. Barry Bonds from 2001 to 2004, 1379, 1381, 1278, and in 04, which is probably his best season ever, and it wasn't even the 73 home run year, he had a 1422 OPS. He walked 232 times that season. He had an on-base percentage of an absurd 609. I really don't know what else you can say about him other than he was easily the most feared hitter of all time.
So we just talked about how Mookie Betts last year, he won MVP with a 1.078 OPS. Barry Lamar Bonds has a career 1.051 OPS. So he's 20 points shy of Mookie Betts' best season, a year that he won MVP and sort of ran away with the MVP title. Yeah. Barry's career average is 1.051.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at it now. From 1992 until 2005, he did not have a season under 1,000 OPS. That's unheard of.
That's incredible.
Like, I know we don't have to convince you guys. I'm sure all of you want Barry Bonds in the game as well. But it's just fun to look at his stats every once in a while and just realize how absurd his career was.
So, question for you. A Barry Bonds flashback, just based on 1 year, would that be on par with an immortal?
With an immortal? Ooh, that would be tough. Maybe if they did the 01 year, the 73 home runs, because
I think the only thing he wouldn't have is the speed.
Yeah. Right, with that season. Because, I mean, let's see. What did he have? He had 13 steals that year. Obviously, there's more to speed than just stealing, but 13 steals, not really that amazing. But early in his career, you know, 1990, he had 52 steals. So if they were to do an immortal Barry Bonds, I'd be terrified. Right. I'd probably quit every game I faced that.
That year, he's like 3 years removed from a gold glove, so his fielding's still going to be pretty good.
Oh, yeah, for sure. If they did a real immortal Barry Bonds, where, like we said, it's a Frankenstein, he would easily have, I would guess, 125 in every hitting stat.
For sure.
Definitely vision 125. His speed would probably be 80+.
Right.
We're probably talking about, like, essentially a Griffey 2.0, but even better.
A Griffey with Babe Ruth's hitting stats.
Right, and maybe a little bit worse fielding. Although, I mean, I'm looking at it now. Bonds won, looks like, 7 or 8 gold gloves. Like, I didn't even know that. There's more. You learn stuff about this guy every...
8-time gold glove winner.
Every day. So, I mean, like I said, we don't need to convince you guys that Bonds needs to be in the game, but if he does, oh boy.
SDS, back up the money truck to get Barry Lamar.
Seriously, I'll pay more for the game if that's what it takes. I don't mind. But
you heard it here. What the Moose will pay, Adam will pay more money for the game to get Barry Lamar Bonds into MLB 19.
All right, let's not put that out there too much, but yes, we do want Barry Bonds, and hopefully he comes in MLB 19, the show. But I think that'll do it for us today. Thank you guys for listening. I hope you enjoyed. If you did, let us know on Twitter at MLB The Showcast. You can also find us there. I'm at XWhatTheMoose, and Aaron's at AaronPlaysMLB. Find us there. Let us know what you think. Give us your thoughts on there. And I think our next episode, we're going to be going over actually playing the game. Things like ranked seasons, conquest, battle royale. How can those things be better? What did they do well this year? And, you know, where do we go from here? So I think that's about it. You got anything else, Aaron?
Nothing else.
All right. Well, thank you guys for listening. Hope you enjoyed. And if you did, let us know on Twitter, like I said. But have a good one, guys.